Hello and welcome to Four Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated show to all things comic book, manga, and sort of pictures with words next to it. And while saying that is usually just a preamble, this is absolutely relevant to today's show, in which I stretch the definition of comic book.
Pictures with words next to them? Does crosswords count in that?
Yep, we are the Geek Show's dedicated crossword show now. So, two across and three down, we have Rob. And confusingly, at three across and two down, we have other Rob.
He rolled with that sort of classy.
I did. Well done, me.
Yeah, I am very, very impressed.
It's all downhill from now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. Should we just end the show there?
Yeah, I don't think any of us are going to come up with a classier or better bit of wordplay today.
Yeah. Even modern ma. It's the best way to do podcasting.
Yes, yes it is.
And for this solves our editing problem. Make every show 5 seconds long.
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway, so we've got some news, I'm assuming.
Yes, we've got news. And we're kicking off with Mr. Brian Michael Bendis, who has tweeted that all the major Iron Man players are coming together for the biggest Iron Man story, wait for it, of all time.
So, bad news, Iron Man fans. Apparently the series is just going to get cancelled after this one story, because what's the point?
Yeah.
It's actually never going to be a story better than this one that Brian Michael Bendis is writing.
So, like, there was, I don't know if it was under Brian Michael Bendis's charge, but around that time, the Spider-Man comic happened.
Around which time?
When he was in charge of sort of all the Spider-Man, and he pushed forward with the other Spider-Man, whose name's completely forgot. It's a part of my life which I've just moved on past.
Miles Morales.
Yeah. So, is he suggesting that he's going to be doing an Iron Man series? Because if he is, I'm pretty sure that's the name of a gay gym.
I mean, that would be the biggest Iron Man story of all time.
Yeah, I mean, nothing wrong with gay gyms if he wants to write that story. All the power to you, Bendis, but
I'm not sure how
it's a bold new take on War Machine.
Yeah, I'm not sure how Robert Downey Jr. is going to play that one.
The thing is that Robert Downey Jr. would.
Yeah, because it'd be some weird crossover between Iron Man and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, wouldn't it?
Oh no, I don't want Val Kilmer as his love interest.
I was thinking of the famous 1980s William Friedkin movie starring Robert De Niro, which Robert De Niro has completely refused. Yeah, the existence of, called Cruising, which he goes cruising for some things. And I'm not going to finish that because I'd get rude, but you get what I'm saying.
Yes, yes we do. But
you mean he goes on a boat?
Yes, he does.
Shuffleboard.
Yeah, but I just don't like, I mean, when I first started this little run in comic books, I thought, oh, Brian Michael Bendis, he did well on Spider-Man. But it feels like, now at least, Marvel goes, what the hell of continuity? You can do whatever you want, Brian and Michael Bendis. Do whatever the hell you want. We don't care. He's the keys to the kingdom.
Yes.
Yeah, that is exactly what they do.
It pretty much is. I mean, I don't know how he's managed to get so much. Well, I do know, because he's written some good stories. But with Brian Michael Bendis, it's kind of balanced. He's written just as much twaddle.
I mean, if anything now, I think it's probably spilt over into the twaddle.
Yeah, I think the scales are tipping more towards twaddle.
Yeah, didn't he do it?
In Mighty Avengers, Doctor Doom yells at Miss Marvel, "Shut up, you fat cow!"
Yep,
classy. He is a classy human being. I'm joking, of course. But didn't he do like in a Guardians of the Galaxy series? Just as Guardians of the Galaxy was like massive with the first movie, and use none of the characters from the movie.
Okay. No, it's the opposite. He is the one who basically turned the comic team into the movie team.
Yeah. The old Guardians of the Galaxy was the ones from the 90s that I read, which was Vance Astro and Yondu and everyone like that. And Vance Astro was some guy who went off into space and then came back 1,000 years later. Everyone's going, oh, yo, you had a wasted journey in that cryo sleep, you know, because we developed faster than light travel about 10 years after you left.
and then the hilarious sitcom music plays.
One of these days. And then it's like, there's a star wipe. and it goes to credits.
That's literally his story, though. He got sent into space in cryosleep. The ship got lost. He returned to Earth 1,000 years later, and they told him it was a pretty pointless journey, actually. And then the Badoon invaded.
Oh, that expression on Steptoe and Son, you know, when it ended, and he pulled a dumb grin.
Oh, was that when the dad was going, Harold?
I'm pulling out all the contemporary references here.
Actually, you know, I think they should bring that Guardians of the Galaxy team back. Because someone setting off on a journey that requires a lot of their time and a huge amount of resources and ends up being a complete waste, I think will really resonate with anyone who's been to university in the past decade.
Yep.
Boom! Hot take!
And have that character modelled on Michael Fassbender so people can really be annoyed, like, on two levels. On that level, and also realising that Michael Fassbender's been in two Alien movies and we all hate them.
But we still don't hate him.
Oh no! What if it's Michael Fassbender that's making them bad?
Because Alien Covenant's so stupid. It's such a stupid movie. Oh.
It's okay, Rob. It's over. It can't hurt you anymore.
It can. It's on TV now.
No, it can. You forget. He's on the movie podcast.
The advert comes up on TV and they have to start screaming at the TV and saying, no, don't you people understand? It's bad. Bad. And then I go into that speech from Network. I'm doing all the wrong references here. I'll just be quiet now.
Get your filthy movie references off this comic book podcast.
I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. There you go, my last one.
Speaking of contemporary references, I've got it. I know what this Iron Man story is.
Oh?
What's going to happen is it's going to start with Tony Stark waking up in a bed and he's going to say, God, I've had such a terrible dream. Me and Captain Marvel fought for no reason. Then Captain America was a Nazi and you were dead. And they'll pan over to the side of the bed where just Wolverine's lying there going, it's a rough dream, bub.
Are you going for the Dallas ending?
Just please, Bendis, do this one good thing. Just wipe out all the evil that you've wrought into the comic book world.
The X-Men tried to do it with the latest movies, haven't they? Retcon, like whatever happened in the later ones. With the war and the last stand and all that nonsense.
Yep.
That's been wiped clean now. I hope anyway.
No, I don't think it's been wiped fully clean. I think they've still got some stains around the edges.
They've recast everybody. It's all done. It's all go. It's all over. Game over, man. Oh no, I've done it again. No. Move on. I'm doing out of date movies references.
It's fine. Everyone gets the game over, man one.
But do you think now in like 5 years' time, they're going to do another X-Men film that retcons like X-Men Apocalypse into never happening?
Probably.
Hope so. That was a boring movie.
Ah. Anyway, moving on from Iron Man to The Prisoner. Y'all remember that cult weird TV show?
The floating ball one.
The floating ball one, yeah.
No, because I'm 26.
You'll have heard of it, though, haven't you?
Yeah, I'd know it with the I'm not a number floaty wibbly wobbly ball.
Yeah,
that's all I know, really. Yeah. The floaty ball thing.
The famous phrase that I actually got wrong and said, I am not a man, I am a number. And it was actually on the box I said that, and you started ripping it out of me, Andrew.
I probably did. That sounds like something I would do.
Yes.
And mistaking that reference sounds like something you would do.
Yep.
So what are they doing with Prisoner, then?
Right, The Prisoner is it's making a comeback as a comic. From Titan Comics, in fact.
Right. What is The Prisoner? Because all I know about is a ball chasing someone down the street and it looked hilarious.
Okay. But The Prisoner was this weird idea where you had all of these really, really famous and influential and intelligent people all trapped on an island and nobody knows the reason why. They've all been transported there by somebody. And they've all been given numbers instead of names, and nobody actually knows why they're all trapped on the island. And
so it's basically the opposite of Love Island.
It's the opposite of Love Island. The main character, who was played by Patrick McGoohan, he constantly tried to escape from the island, and he was always getting trapped. He was always getting brought back. And it was this weird thing that kind of went into various Kafka things and, you know, other philosophical aspects and metaphysical aspects and stuff like that. It's worth a watch if you're up for something that's just totally out there and makes not a jot of sense.
Some really, really ropey 1960s, 70s sci-fi nonsense.
Yeah.
Where everybody wears turtlenecks.
There's a question. They're doing a comic book series.
Yep.
And they basically have an unlimited budget.
Yep.
Does that mean, like, suddenly the island's going to become much more high-tech, or are they going to stick with, like, the ropey 1960s special effects?
I hope they stick with the ropey 1960s special effects. I mean, The Prisoner's been hugely influential on all of the weird cult sci-fi shows. You know, Lost, for example.
Yep, that one bit where they got chased by a giant ball.
I'm talking about the fact that Lost ended up making not a jot of sense, and the reason why they got away with that was because The Prisoner went there first, and everyone's saying, oh, well, The Prisoner didn't make any sense either, but that was amazing.
Selling me on The Prisoner, then. It's the show that made Lost not make sense.
Pretty much.
The best tagline.
Pretty much. I mean, you know, Series 4 of Andromeda had other reasons why it didn't make sense. But if they just basically said, you know, we were trying to go for something akin to The Prisoner, I don't think anyone would have blamed anyone.
But The Prisoner is the reason the OA exists as well, with its saving the day with aerobics.
Probably.
What?
I think Rob needs an explanation for that, Andrew.
Basically, the OA is a TV show in which a magic girl comes back and she was maybe experimented on by aliens or people in the future. I don't know, I watched like half the series. People, the movements, which is like magic yoga.
That sounds like Sailor Moon.
It is Sailor Moon. But imagine Sailor Moon, but it's just the transformation sequence.
Oh.
And then suddenly the bad guy is stopped.
Okay. Wonderful.
I'm not sure what to make of that, but...
I've no idea who'd be clamouring from a comic remake of The Prisoner, though, really. This is like Sheena, Leave Awake.
Well, it kind of makes sense because they're making a continuation, and I think it's just going to be like a limited run. And they're doing it to celebrate the first UK broadcast of The Prisoner, which is why Titan Comics are actually making this comic. So it makes a little bit of sense.
Groovy, I guess.
Here's something that I'm sure will fit in exactly with the world of The Prisoner.
Oh?
Can get a special brush that you put in your mouth and use it to lick your cat queen.
Yeah. Believe it or not, remember years ago, Rob, when we were doing The Geek Show as a two-hour weekly show? We actually had that on The Geek Show.
I kind of remember that.
An attachment for your tongue that you can use to lick your cat and brush it at the same time.
Sounds sexual.
I'm watching a video and it definitely is.
It's weird you say that because that's actually a good segue.
Oh no, I don't know what we're going to.
Right. You know Venom is getting a movie. Sony have announced that Venom is getting a movie.
Whoa. Is he?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Potentially starring Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, guess who they've got to rewrite the screenplay for the Venom movie?
Seth Rogen.
No. Kelly Marcel, who is best known for writing the screenplay to 50 Shades of Grey.
God, I wish it was Seth Rogen instead.
Is it just going to have Tom Hardy necking with Venom? Because again, there's the audience.
But no, it can't be, because to save on budget, Tom Hardy will be both Eddie Brock, and then once he's covered himself in tar or something, Venom.
Yep.
It'll be his understudy. His understudy's in tar. Tom Hardy and his understudy just necking in this really weird pornographic movie directed by the guy.
Not too pornographic.
Oh, no. I think it's the guy who directed Zombieland who's doing this, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Because I remember vaguely recalling something like this. But then my mind just rebelled and forgot about it instantly.
How does this happen? How do you go, we need someone to rewrite the superhero movie, 50 Shades of Grey person. That'll be good. Everyone loved that film. And they also have skills incredibly relevant to this film.
Just horrified yourself again?
I was about to say this film about a goo monster.
That's a specialty offshoot.
No. Yes. It's a goo monster who's special, who's basically taken the better qualities of Spider-Man, which is wrapping people up and hanging them in weird positions.
I believe that you think that's Spider-Man's best quality.
I'm talking about in terms of 50 Shades of Grey, that would be his best quality.
That's just such a weird pro. I'm pretty sure that Hollywood producers are just insane people.
I mean, I think I'm starting to understand, like, because I guess it's sort of like a possessive relationship, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, he's possessed by the symbiont. Oh! Does that mean Eddie Brock is the last and the symbiont is Grey?
Says I got a special room with special stuff.
Yes.
I don't know the quote because I've not read the book or seen the film. I've just seen the trailers and the mocks. But
I think it's come to my naughty spank palace. That's the line.
So it's going to... hang on. If Venom's movie is Venom's naughty spank palace...
And Spider-Man was the one that got away.
Yes.
No. This is skirting a line here.
I'm starting to like it. It's like Spider-Man just... scene with Venom just like holding a picture of Spider-Man staring out of a window into the rain.
We're on to film gold here. And it's Tom Hardy as well, so people will love it.
Exactly.
It's Tom Hardy lusting after, no, can't finish that cut. But... oh, you knew what I was going to say, yes. And that can't stay in.
Oh, no. Because this is still canonically the same universe where Tom Holland is Spider-Man, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, and he's a teenage boy.
Oh, no. Oh, this has gone wrong very quickly.
We'll just keep it while it was still all golden. Ignore all this. Unless it's in the future, and then we're okay. We're covered.
Let's deviate from there to V for Vendetta, Andrew. Quickly.
It's me. I have the story. That's why no one's saying things.
Yes.
So I've got a story that's kind of just a little rumor at the moment that Channel 4 might be working on a V for Vendetta series.
See, when you told me, I went, ooh.
That it could be interesting if they give, if they commit to it. They had that, they had Black Mirror, which is, it has a sort of alternative strand comic book idea to it, you know.
I'd be more inclined to go with something like Humans instead, because...
I wasn't thinking of Humans. There was another one that I can't remember the name of. It had yellow box art, and it was beloved. It had two series, but...
Oh.
Its name's vanished from my brain hole.
Thing.
Yeah, that thing show with the yellow.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Bake Off.
I should really Google that.
It doesn't ring a bell.
But yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. But yeah, I'd be interested in a V for Vendetta series.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people are against it, but I quite like the film.
I like the film as well. Okay, yeah, people complain that they got the big explosions at the beginning and the end the wrong way around. But I never really held that against the film. I thought...
But what I was going to say is that the criticism of the film that I do agree with is that it's kind of just like V for Vendetta, the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, it is.
And so it would be nice to get a full series that can actually go in depth and get to the meaty details.
Yeah.
Tasty, meaty details.
I'm curious.
Utopia.
Yeah. Oh,
it's called Utopia.
That's the one.
Yeah. I thought Rob was being quiet in the background there.
They also did Dead Set as well, so I have like a history of sort of weird satire.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd call V for Vendetta weird satire.
I mean, it kind of is a satire.
It kind of is.
And it's Alan Moore, so it's definitely weird. He'd probably hate it anyway because it's Alan Moore, and he hates anything which isn't cosmic or beard-related.
Oh, God. The fact that there's now going to be a Watchmen TV series and a V for Vendetta TV series.
Oh, God.
He must be locked in a basement somewhere, just like covered in snakes, howling at the moon. Even though I can't see it, because as I said before, he's locked in a basement.
Yeah,
he is kind of proof that Cthulhu is real, though, isn't he? Because he saw Cthulhu and he went in totally insane.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Just like Rob did.
Yeah, it's a different type of insane, though.
No. My insanity is. After you guys told me about this person called Marina Abramovich, I googled her and that was it. She is Cthulhu.
Okay.
Speaking of women, yeah, that works as a segue. Can this series match the incredibleness that was Natalie Portman's Courtney accent?
I forgot about that.
Should recast her in an older role.
Basically, like, keep every other actor from the... Oh, no. Oh.
The only thing that you should keep is...
I can't keep every other actor because John Hurt's dead.
But keep Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving's amazing, yeah.
Keep Hugo Weaving as V.
Yeah, because, I mean, he doesn't even need to show up. He can just, like, record lines from his house in his underpants.
Yeah. Do you know what I'd love to see is Natalie Portman versus Dick Van Dyke in Who's Got the Worst Cockney Accent?
I mean, V for Vendetta isn't that long. I'm sure they can make that an entire episode.
have it directed by David Lynch, and then it's totally legitimate because he'd do stuff like that.
Yeah.
No reason whatsoever. Just do it.
Can we have Guy Ritchie as the judge?
Oh.
Yeah.
By judge, I mean like proper Japanese martial arts star where he has a flag in either hand.
Oh,
it's yes. Just whoever he thinks has done the best accent.
No. You want to go for the sumo judge because he's got like one of those weird fans in one hand. He's wearing this. He's wearing like a 3-foot hat that's a bit like the Pope's thing, and these weird robes that are just far too heavy.
I feel a bit of stopless before it gets carried away. But if it's Channel 4, I'm intrigued by it. I'll just say that much.
If it's
Channel 4, have a good track record.
Yeah, if it's
dramas and stuff like that, they have a very good track record.
Yeah, and if it is Channel 4, they probably will get carried away.
Because they can still do sort of flighty ideas.
Yeah.
With an element of down to earth and realism, you know, like Humans. That was a particularly successful case of that.
Yeah.
And that one series they did called Utopia. Remember that one, guys?
Yeah.
You remember that one. That was amazing, that one.
On that note, let's take a break.
Hello, this is Ryan from the Geek Show Podcast Network. Do you like trees? What about paper? What about words? Yes, words are good. Then you will like Literally Loitering, only available on the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Hello, fellow Vault Hunters. I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films, and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out the Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well-staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week, and do it reasonably well.
Welcome back, and now it's time for various comics, and we're kicking off with Rob.
Oh, no. No. I read the book. It was it's a rite of passage, I guess, to be on 4-panel and do something which is truly dreadful.
Yes. Well,
you've all had it in various shapes.
We've all got those scars.
It's just some of us have more than others. I think Mick has the most because he had the ankle.
Yeah, well, I have my scar. And it is Call of Cthulhu, put up by Dark Horse Comics. It's been written by Aaron Dorkin, the Eisner Award-winning author of Beasts of Burden. So far, so good.
Hang on. Is it Call of Cthulhu or what?
It's called, like, Calla, as in a name, Calla.
Ah, right, okay.
And then Cthulhu. Point out,
isn't a name.
No. It's like Call Her Cthulhu. It's trying to... turn Call of Cthulhu into a name for the lead character.
Have called it Call Her Cthulhu.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a story about Cthulhu, essentially, for the young adult audience, imagined with the style of Disney princesses. I could just drop mic there and walk off, and that tells you everything you need to know.
I'm just imagining Cthulhu as a Disney princess.
Well, that's the point. I mean, it's a girl from the inner city who, there's the old ones are in there. I mean, it is at least well researched, and it has some sort of respect for the source material by Lovecraft. But the way she gets her powers is she has green hair. Her parents are researching stuff. Parents die. There's a bag in the background. People come to get the bag. Carla picks up the bag first. It's a radioactive bag that bites her and turns her hair green and turns her into a radioactive Cthulhu girl. Yes, that's right. I mashed up the Spider-Man origin because once I read it, I was like, that is legitimately very Spider-Man-like. But the point is, she is a vessel for the returning Cthulhu. And I'll be honest, there's no real point of... I mean, you're supposed to emphasize with this girl and sympathize with her, but you don't. she's just a, I know she's supposed to be like a vessel, but she's just a nonsense character. And it's full of nonsense characters. It doesn't give you like anything to really grasp. It's just constantly her complaining about, oh, I don't want Cthulhu's powers. Oh, I don't want this. It kind of comes across as sort of a bratty teenager who just says no to the parents because the parents are parents. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the biggest offender of this is the art. The art is really bad. It's by Sarah Dyer. Hang on, let me get the right. Who did what? Who's to blame here most then?
Who's on the hit list?
They're all on the hit list. Let's just leave them all. I don't want a single, like, say five names, because nobody's taking responsibility for the art. But it's very, very crude. The backgrounds are basically all brown. The only, or one colour. The only times where the background actually, any sort of interest is when there's like a monster, threatening to kill everybody. And I think that happens about two or three times in the entire, first comic book, collector's comic book. The character faces all look basically identical. Like, they're all sort of teenage girls. The only thing that's different is the colour of the skin and hair. It seems, you know, like in stop animation, where you have to use different mouths for different shapes, or different expressions, or what they're saying, or shouting, or different emotions.
Yeah.
The art in this, it's like they did that, but it's hand-drawn, and they've only had four mouth shapes to use. And that might not sound bad, but when you've got like a couple of hundred page book, it really, really does show how limited the art style is. And it just looks stupid, frankly. And also, it's not like it's, you know, it's for the young adult audience. You think it'd tone down some of the darker edges.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really. It's just kind of a mess. And, you know, that's the case when you've got book quotes on the cover and none of them say, well, some of them say, like, generic things. You know, like you take a random quote from a review. And then the next sentence is, but it's truly awful. Did you take that one sentence out of context to make it sound better than it is? Like the one on the front cover said, Carla may be the first Lovecraftian coming of age tale. That doesn't say anything about whether it's good or not.
Yeah, well, I think I made the comment that the next line could easily be, and it proves why there should never be a second.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure Lovecraft has done some coming of age tales. I don't know whether they were Cthulhu related. There was definitely stories that he wrote that involved children.
Yeah, but generally speaking, Call of Cthulhu is just, it's like a webcomic, and webcomics are much of a muchness. In that world, you have to really look for the good stuff. And this just feels like any old webcomic that was plucked from obscurity. And ultimately, for something as mad and as adventurous and interesting as Cthulhu, it's just boring.
It's funny you say that, because...
really, really boring.
Yeah, it's funny you say that it's more like a webcomic, because I think it's more like a Western webcomic rather than...
Yeah.
The webcomics that I'm seeing coming out of Japan and Korea and places like that are just amazing.
Yeah.
Except the ones that are terrible.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the first Dark Horse comic I've covered, and I know Dark Horse, they're one of the more interesting... indie distributors out there, especially when the horror stuff they bring out. But this, I don't know who this is for.
I don't know if I'd classify Dark Horse as indie anymore.
Well, they're big indie. They're a bindi. They're an Australian woman called Bindi.
Are they a bindi bargee?
All that.
Do they take their eyes out and put them on the chin?
Yes. They're a massive bindi comic book distributor with chins, eyes on the chin, and they're from Australia. That's Dark Horse. But yeah, this is like one of the weakest things that's done in a while, Dark Horse. And I've got a question, who is it actually for? And I just don't know. I just can't imagine who's going to pick this up, because kids who pick up comic books, they have a much more clearly defined thing, which is for them. And the whole young audience market, they will gravitate to things which are either, I don't know, more adults. There isn't really that gap. Obvious a gap in the comic book market, like there is in normal fiction, where that young adult book sort of came from.
Yeah,
in popularity.
Yeah, that makes sense. So it's not a recommend from you then?
Hell no.
Okay, but Andrew.
Now it's time to go from hell no to hell boy.
It's almost like a plan, that.
Okay, good. Oh. Fine, my terrible plan. Because I've got a thing from Dark Horse as well, and it is Hellboy, An Assortment of Horrors. And it's a goddamn dirty lie is what it is. I ordered this expecting a comic book, and it's one of them word books. But it's okay.
Dirty dogs.
Okay, because before each short story in this collection, there's an illustration by Mike Mignola. So it basically counts.
Technically.
It's images and words. It's kind of a comic, maybe.
Well, no, because if you're talking about images and words, that's just a gallery. If they're in sequence, are they in sequence?
Oh, no, they're not in sequence. Well, whatever, I did it anyway, and it's not like we've got a book podcast. We do, it's called Literary Loitering, you should listen to it, it's really good. And I am just saying that because I'm on it.
It's true, it is very good.
So yeah, Hellboy, An Assortment of Horrors. It's much the same as many other short story collections I've read, in that there's a mix of stuff, good, bad. But I will say this one is definitely more weighted towards the good.
Okay.
So I think, rather than kind of going through all 16, I'll just pick up some highlights.
All right.
So we had probably what I would say is the best story is Her Right Hand by Paul Tremblay. And it's kind of cool because it's not actually about Hellboy.
No.
It's about this little girl called Gemma, whose mother dies of cystic fibrosis. And kind of one of the last images she sees is her mother's hand covered in blood. And from that, she gets this idea of a red right hand. And like she starts drawing it. And kind of eventually the hand gets bigger and she attaches it to a big muscly arm and then a torso. And while all this is going on, her father's still kind of spiraling into depression, drinking a lot and being kind of shouty.
Yeah.
And also at the same time, Gemma discovers in her back garden, there's a goblin who keeps kind of tormenting her and telling her that it's all her fault her mother died. And so kind of as the story goes on, she draws more and more onto this red hand, eventually creating her own superhero who conveniently is Hellboy. And then Hellboy shows up and beats the goblin. And kind of at the same time, Gemma's able to get through to her father, like kind of help break him out of his depression. And it's cool because the whole thing is you don't know how much, like, is this actually a Hellboy story where Hellboy shows up and fights a goblin? Or is this kind of all in Gemma's head as she kind of tries to channel her depression? And it was very well done.
Okay. See, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was. And then you've got some other really good but more traditional stories. Like you've got Tales of the Wormlord, which I loved because it's this idea that Hellboy finds out about this kind of ancient necromancer living in a town. And he finds this out by just kind of hanging out at a bar, just sort of chatting with people over a pint.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can learn in a pub.
Like there's also a great bit where he eventually goes to the necromancer's house using a map drawn on the back of a beer napkin.
Okay.
That's just incredibly Hellboy.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah, and that one is by Nathan Barlingrud. And, another very good one. The Other Side of Summer by Chris Robertson, who is the guy kind of took over from Mike Mignola on the Hellboy and the BRPD comic. And he did this really lovely little story about kind of Hellboy as a child.
Okay.
Sort of teaming up with a teenage girl he met to go on this kind of Nancy Drew-esque mystery about a ghost who might be haunting a farm. It's fun to see Hellboy as like a cute little kid who argues with people over whether pancakes are better than waffles.
They're not.
Ooh, Hellboy would disagree with you there.
I was going to say, it depends on the pancake.
I mean, well, yeah, a good pancake is better than a bad waffle.
Yeah.
But that's probably not saying much. Then, kind of, the last good one I wanted to point out is one more Radical Stone Fox by our, I was going to say good friend, but we don't actually know her, Chelsea Kane, a.k.a. writer of Mockingbird.
Yes.
Gone before its time, R.I.P. But yeah, well, it's a cool story. It's about Liz Sherman, kind of as a teenager, running away from the BRPD and going on a road trip. And she meets some hippies, because it's the 70s.
Is one of them called the Screeber?
No, it's not. That's probably a reference to a thing I don't get, because I'm young.
No, it's one of those obscure characters that I pulled out of the hat when we were doing the Ultimate Marvel thing with
Matt. Oh, yeah, that's right. Like I said, there are a couple that aren't so good. Like there's When Doves Cry by Delilah S. Dawson, which has kind of got this really heavy-handed... get it, heavy-handed, because he's Hellboy, he's got a big stone fist. But yeah, this really on-the-nose message about, like, Hellboy fights demons, but men who beat their wives are the real monsters.
Oh, no.
That's... Which it lays on very... Like, I think there's even a bit where he says, oh, I've seen some bad stuff in my time, but this takes the cake.
That sounds like a 90s Superman comic. Or the plot for one, anyway.
Sounds like those movies you see on Channel 5 in the afternoon from Canada that are all awful.
Yes.
Yeah. Man.
And then there's one. See, it's kind of there's The Duelist by Jonathan Mabry, which it's annoying because it's one of those stories that's a bit rough around the edges. Kind of it's... But the pacing seems a bit off in places, and it does the thing of being very overly descriptive, which is annoying because it's got kind of possibly one of the most amazingly random setups for a story I've ever seen. It's Hellboy in a pistol duel with the ghost of Aaron Burr.
Who's Aaron Burr?
The man who shot Alexander Hamilton.
Oh, God. So, hang on. How did Hellboy end up in a pistol duel with Aaron Burr?
Because his ghost kept popping up and killing people in duels.
What, was he just appearing and hitting them with, like, a spectral glove? I challenge you to a duel.
Pretty much. So, I feel like I can forgive that story for its bad points. So, yeah, that's Hellboy, an assortment of horrors.
Was it horrific?
It was both spooky and scary, much like a skeleton.
Jolly good. Ah, so is it over to me then?
Yeah, if you must.
I have very straightforward things this week. No crossovers, no weird stuff, nothing like that. It's very, very straightforward.
Goodbye.
Yes. First up from Image Comics is Horizon. I've read the first 5 issues of it. It's by Brandon Thomas, and it's basically one of those strange sci-fi things that Image sometimes comes out with that on the surface looks to be quite straightforward, but underneath it's got a lot more depth to the story than you actually think. The story's about this woman called Zia Marlin, and she's crashed on Earth, but she crashed on Earth on purpose because she's here on a mission and she's meeting other secretive members of her race who are also on Earth. Now, the reason they're on Earth is because Earth is basically desperate. Earth is basically on its last legs, and the governments of the world are doing their usual thing. They're not telling the population that Earth is on its last legs, then basically just keeping the information to themselves, yada, yada, yada. But Earth has basically become like the British Empire, and so they've reached out into space and started colonizing other planets, but the way they've been doing it is exactly like all of the other colonial powers used to do. Go to someone else's country, kill the indigenous population, and take over. And so Zia...
We suck, John.
Yeah. So Zia and her cohorts have come to Earth to make sure that humans can never go into space again. They basically brought the war to Earth before Earth can bring the war to their planet, because they know that they're on Earth's wanted list. And that's why they've come to Earth in the first place. So what you have is this strange kind of action spy thriller involving aliens who are trying to stop humans, or stop the human race from conquering and killing all their people before they even get to them. And humans, or the human powers, who know that the world is pretty much done for, and they're trying to find ways of taking people to other planets, because the planet is going to go kaput at some point very soon. So it's pretty interesting, I'll be honest. It caught me by surprise, because the alien characters are very, very human, not just in terms of their design, but in terms of their mannerisms and stuff like that. I kind of wish they were a little bit more alien, you know, if they weren't so similar to humans, but I kind of understand why they've made them so similar to humans. They've just made
There's an awful skin. Lot of in the Image lineup, though, isn't there?
Yeah. It's just basically, if they made them a little bit more alien, maybe not in terms of their looks, but in terms of their mannerisms, maybe they're, you know, then I could, you know, it might reinforce the idea that these people are from another world, but they've got very human...
I mean, I guess if it's a comic, you kind of need human features to help convey emotion.
Yeah. But it's...
And if they were very alien-y, it'd be straying into 7 to Eternity territory.
Well, it's not so much that. It's just basically their mannerisms, their thoughts, their feelings, their, you know, the way they react to their emotions. They're all very, very human. Does that make sense? And that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. I wish it was maybe a little bit more alien. Weirdly enough, I've got to say, you know, Spock actually came across as more alien than human because of the whole kind of, that is illogical, Captain, you know. That made the Vulcans very clearly separate from the humans because they didn't rely on their emotions. And I'm not saying that I would like the, you know, Zia or her cohorts to behave like Spock. I'm just saying that giving them something that kind of separates them away from humans would have been nice and in terms of their behaviors. But that's my only gripe with this. Other than that, and the artwork's pretty good. The story itself is what's got me interested because you do see the kind of cruelty and the callousness on the human side. And you kind of empathize with these people who've come from space to stop humans going into space. And you basically read it and you think, we're dicks. We are. We're intergalactic knobs. We go to other people's planets, plant a flag, and then just take over.
So it's basically like Twitter and comic book form.
Yeah, basically. And that's the thing. You do think that, but there's at the back of your mind, you're thinking, yeah, but Earth is going to collapse at any point, and so the human race has to continue somewhere.
IKEA
is not a planet. Although, given the law of averages, there probably is a planet IKEA somewhere.
Yes.
It's a bit flat until people get there and start building it.
So, yeah, that's you with Horizon Zero Dawn or whatever it's called.
No, it's just called Horizon, and it's worth a read.
Hmm.
That sounds very informative.
Yeah, I'll jump in next. I have been reading, also from Image Comics, Moonshine by Brian Azzarello with art by Eduardo Rizzo. And it's a horror gangster series. It's set in the Prohibition, and it's in the Deep South. Did I say it was called Moonshine? I forgot.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Moonshine, because that's important. Because it's about they call him a torpedo, like negotiate.
Oh, right. Is he like a transporter type person?
No, no. He just like goes ahead and does a negotiation before the gang in force heads out. It's about him, that character. He's called Lou. He's on often referred to him, well, at least to himself anyway, as Handsome Lou, almost condescendingly as well. But he goes down to the Deep South after the sample is really, really rather remarkable moonshine. Lou gets there, has a altercation with the guy who does it, and then people start turning up dead because one of the people who's involved in that moonshine operation is also a werewolf.
I get moonshine. Like the drink, but also the moon.
Clever, clever.
I am refusing to comment.
Teasing aside, its first issue is, honest, one of the finest first issues I've read. I mean, I'm not a massive comic reader, so that isn't the biggest plaudit I can throw at it. But it does start off really well. I mean, it's got this great art style of it being sort of very contrast heavy. So you get like darks and lights and not very minimal in-betweens.
Yeah.
Almost as if every scene sort of, by moonlight.
Okay.
So it creates this really cool sort of noir effect that I like a lot. It's kind of like what Mick was talking about a few weeks ago with The Coldest Night, was it?
The Coldest Winter.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one. So it has this very unusual, distinctive style. It's very graphic because of the werewolf thing. And it's just really interesting, you know, placing a horror monster in a world of sort of bravado and well, gang warfare between the affluent New Yorkers, Italian New Yorkers, and sort of the perceived scruffy, down-and-out, backwoods Louisiana, West Virginia, but still. Deep South, you know. So there's a nice contrast there. It's lots of contrast in this. And it's enjoyable for a while, you know. It does keep this whole conflict of the negotiation going really, really badly with Lou. And there's also, like, as well as the family who are doing the moonshine, there's also a family to the side who is like a black family, and there seems to be something going on there between Lou and the moonshine family. And it's just like a lot of conflict and what's happening and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think the issue with it is, like I said, it starts off really, really well, but then it starts instilling this idea of Lou being messed with, like, mentally. Is the stuff happening to him imagined? Is it part of his dream, because he has some really weird dreams about guilt and about something that's happened in his past? Or is it real? And as all this is happening, there's also the narrative of the conflict between the New York gang, who don't like being messed with, and the cockiness of the moonshiners. So there's that real story happening, and to the other side, there's Lou's story, which we don't know what's real. So it gets awfully convoluted the longer it goes on.
Okay.
And I think at its best, Moonshine was really, really good when it was keeping things simple.
Okay.
I understand messing with reality is popular, but it doesn't mean it has to be in, well, everything, really. I think it's the major downfall of this, because before that, and when it's not trying to be that sort of messy, what's happening sort of story style, it's really good. But when it messes with what's happening and the reliability of the narrator, I think it just loses a lot of its, well, a lot of my goodwill for it, really. But it looks really cool. It's original, you know, and it's a fun read. It just has that big notch against it, I think, unfortunately.
Okay.
But yeah, that's Moonshine.
Okay, Andrew.
Yep. So I have been reading Marvel Legacy, which is kind of the, I think a primer is what you'd call it.
Okay.
A comic to set up the next year or whatever of Marvel stories.
Is Legacy like their next big crossover event thing or something?
I think it's less a crossover, more kind of the general direction of all their books.
Because they did like all those Generations things, didn't they?
Yeah. Basically, what I'd compare it to, mainly because it's what Marvel absolutely ripped off, is DC Rebirth.
Ah, right.
So this is essentially the comparison to DC Rebirth, the comic itself.
Right, okay.
Which is good, because this review is mostly going to be comparing the two. So Marvel Legacy, it's basically this big sprawling story. Starts off in the year, like, 1 million BC, where a group of kind of the first ever Avengers, consisting of Odin, the Phoenix, Black Panther, I kind of like, because he's basically just got like a panther pelt wrapped around him, even though I'm pretty sure panthers didn't exist back then, but shh.
It's from the panther god.
Yeah, probably. You've got a version of Iron Fist, you've got Agamotto as the Sorcerer Supreme. Really, another character I quite like is Starbrand, who is just like a Neanderthal with a big glowing symbol on his chest. And also Ghost Rider, who annoyingly only used to ride on a woolly mammoth, because the issue starts with the woolly mammoth dead. And no, Marvel, you can't promise me a Ghost Rider who rides a flaming woolly mammoth and not show it to me. That's just not cool.
Massive tease.
It is, the filthy teasers.
Yep.
But yeah, these kind of first Avengers end up fighting the Fallen, which is like a big spooky celestial.
And not some weird robot voiced by Leonard Nimoy.
No, that was that a different... That might have been a different Transformers character, Rob. You're trying to make me distinguish Transformers films, and you know that's literally impossible.
No, you're right. Leonard Nimoy was Prime's friend in the Michael Bay ones, wasn't he? The Fallen was somebody else.
Is he the one who looked like a little bit like a big poo?
Yes.
Yeah, but anyway, then it flash forwards to the present day, where basically some of the modern day equivalents of those first Avengers have been having spooky dreams about the stuff that happened at the start of the comic. And Ghost Rider, the Robbie Veyers version,
yeah,
who people will know if they watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., insert Mick saying more about that.
Yes.
Because he's the only one who watches it. So he wakes up in South Africa, where he comes across some kind of archaeological dig site where people are digging something up. Gee, I wonder what it could be. Could it be that celestial? Yes, it could be, because it is. So he does that, and then Starbrand appears, and they have the superhero fight, because Starbrand wants to stop people from digging up the celestial, I assume. Because, of course, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say, no, don't dig this up, because it's a bad thing that will destroy the world. He just yells a bunch of random nonsense. Like, though you've seen it in your dreams, I can't let you near it, and I'll kill whoever I have to.
Because
that's good. That's the kind of reasoned discourse that convinces people to your side.
So typical superhero problem solving.
Yeah. I hate it so much, Rob. It angers me so... Just say that the bad thing is bad.
Yeah.
It would be literally so much easier. Anyway, while that's going on, Loki convinces a bunch of frost giants to go steal a thing from an old S.H.I.E.L.D. base. So that's why apparently S.H.I.E.L.D. is being shut down. Frost giants go there. Yeah, because they got taken over by Nazi Captain America.
No, I mean, is it S.H.I.E.L.D. technology? Or is it technology that S.H.I.E.L.D. has confiscated from somewhere else?
We're getting there.
Oh, okay.
So the Frost Giants, they raid the base, but the Avengers, by which I mean Falcon and Thor, and also Ironheart, who doesn't count as an Avenger. Shut up, Ironheart. I hate you and you're stupid. they appear and they fight them, and they do some superhero stuff, and Ironheart has a really obnoxious bit where she goes, ooh, can I say the thing? And they're like, fine, you can say the thing. And she's like, Avengers! Oh no, I've forgotten the rest of the line, even though it's literally one word. Yeah, I feel like this is why I don't like Ironheart.
All I'm saying on that...
Seems like whenever she appears, it just seems like she's been arbitrarily thrust in a desperate attempt to get people to like her.
Have you actually read the Ironheart comics? As in these from the beginning?
No, and I probably should, but I really don't care about her.
No, I've been reading them. I was actually going to do them at some point, but not today. But they're not very good.
Yeah, that's it. She's just a completely pointless character. Like, she's just sort of filling in for Iron Man, but not really, because Iron Man's still running around.
No, he's virtual Iron Man.
Yeah, what is even the point?
So it's the multiple Spider-Man problem all over again.
No, it's not. Spider-Man had a much simpler problem than this.
Oh, well, that's the black female Iron Man, isn't it?
Yes. But yeah, it is the same problem as, like, Miles Morales has now being a completely perfunctionary character.
Yeah.
So, yeah, while that's going on, we also kind of... That's kind of the main story of the issue, but it also cuts back and forth to various other scenes. So you've got Captain America, the good Captain America, who's not actually the real Captain America. He's, like, a clone of the memory of the Captain America that maybe didn't exist, but did exist, but shrug. And Thor, he's doing some drinking in Asgard, but then a man says that Mangog is coming and he jumps off a bridge. And then we cut to back to Stark HQ, because Tony Stark's gone missing, even though he's in a coma and also a robot.
Yeah, that was the thing that happened in the Ironheart comic recently as well. Tony Stark was suddenly missing. He's like, no, he's just not there. We don't know where he is. But he's in a coma.
Yes, he is. Also, Deadpool is sad now.
Why is Deadpool sad now?
Because he killed Phil Coulson or something.
What, again?
Maybe. I don't know.
Is it all one issue?
Yeah, well, it's like it's 59 pages long.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Which that's is a big one.
That means Marvel can charge even more than the ridiculously obscene comic prices.
Yep.
So then we cut back the not Avengers, because go away, Ironheart. They mostly beat the Frost Giants, but one of them runs off with the crate. But then he gets hit by a truck. And guess who comes out of the truck?
Phil Coulson?
It's only the gosh dang Wolverine.
Oh.
Yep. See, I was right all along.
Does Wolverine pick up the crate thinking it's a case of beer and put it in the back of the truck and drive off to his lonely homestead? Then he opens the crate and it's filled with bottles, which he thinks are beer, and then he cracks one open and sits on this Porsche, well, in his rocking chair, with his shotgun, drinking this strange drink that he thinks
is
beer.
Except for none of that, because it's actually an Infinity Stone.
Ah, okay. And so Wolverine has an Infinity Stone now?
Yep, he does, because that's what they're called, remember, Rob, the Infinity Stones.
Yes.
not gems. They're definitely not gems.
Yes, I know.
They've never been gems.
Apparently, allegedly. They were never polished to a perfect shine.
Marvel. And yeah, that's pretty much the comic. Oh, and also Valeria Richards is back, so maybe the Fantastic Four are coming back. But the main thing is that Wolverine's alive again, which is great. Because it's been so long without Wolverine, you know, since he died. And then there was no Wolverine, except for Sabretooth, who basically took over as Wolverine. And then X-23, who actually took over as Wolverine. And then Old Man Logan, who was literally just Logan, but old.
Yep.
And now Jimmy Hudson as well, who is Wolverine's son from an alternate reality.
Oh, I forgot about
that. Apart from that, there's been no Wolverines for nearly 3 years.
And Kitty Pryde was also Wolverine in the Spider-Gwen series.
I forgot about that as well.
And Wolverine was also alive in that too. It's nonsense.
it is ridiculous. So yeah, that's all the stuff that happens in Marvel Legacy. Don't buy it. It's certainly not worth the obscene asking price.
I'll be honest. DC's Rebirth issue was much better by the sounds of it.
Yeah, because I think the main thing is DC had that thread of Wally West coming back.
Yeah.
And, like, it was an actual good story as well as setting up all the DC stuff.
Yeah.
Where this is just a bunch of, hey, you should read this comic, and you should read this comic, and you should read this comic. And also Valeria Richards is back.
I think the main difference between the DC Rebirth and Marvel is Marvel sound like they've tried to fit as many of their characters into one comic as possible, whereas DC were mainly focused on characters close to Wally West.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's, again, that ties into what I was saying. DC Rebirth was an actual story.
Yeah.
This is basically just a brochure. Brochure that costs, like, £5.
Marvel's overpriced superhero brochure.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, that's us for today. So we're going to love you and leave you there. We'll be back next time with more comics and stuff like that, because we're expecting a new delivery. So look forward to it. In the meantime, if you want to catch up with any of our previous shows, you can find them on Audioboom, iTunes, or the podcast provider of your choice. We are also on Patreon, so please show your support. We could do with the funds to improve on equipment and various things like that. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, or email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. Until next time, then, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
I most certainly have not been Colin Cthulhu.
We'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening.